Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst. From swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean, these experiences are unparalleled in their historical relevance and grandeur. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to preserve the past to inspire future generations of dreamers. This is accomplished through the youth education program focused on deserving junior high students across California. These children experience a world of science, technology, engineering, art, and math at Hearst Castle, one of the most awe-inspiring locations in the world. The legacy of Julia Morgan, one of the most important women in the history of engineering and architecture, is woven into the foundation at Hearst Castle's mission. Julia Morgan's life can continue to inspire and empower young women and young men all over the world. This is one of the few opportunities to donate to such an important cause that not only changes the lives and perspectives of children, but also provides lifetime memories and unrivaled experiences for our generous donors. Please go to the website, foundation@hearstcastle.com, to learn more about how you can help us with our important mission.
I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from the rural village of Augusta, Missouri. It's less than an hour's drive to St. Louis, but it's truly a world away. Jerry and David Hoffman grew up in Washington, Missouri, at a time when David's family didn't even have running water in their home. After graduating from college, Hoffman's initial foray as one of the world's foremost corporate headhunters catapulted his business ventures to include investing in financial services, hospitality, aviation, media and marketing, and more. A viral Hoffman focus is real estate ventures across America. The Hoffman family grew to become the biggest developer in Naples, Florida, with 42 commercial properties, including ownership of the Hertz Arena and the Everblades hockey team. 50 years later, the Hoffmans returned to their roots to reinvigorate the small town of Augusta, Missouri. It's just a stone's throw from their hometown. With an initial $150 million economic infusion, including renovations of more than 60 historic homes and commercial enterprises, along with ownership of 4 wineries and more than 1,250 vineyard acres. We met up with David and Jerry Hoffman at a Fruit of the Harvest dinner in Augusta. Come along and join the conversation to discover the rest of the amazing story of the Hoffman's passion and love of Augusta, and how they are in the midst of turning the area into a national wine destination slated to rival Napa Valley. We'll also visit with Colin Pennington, the Hoffman's winemaker with the Augusta Wine Company, followed by Chris Armstrong, managing partner at the Hoffman Creative Agency, who shares insights about the viral rebirth of Augusta, Missouri.
I'm David Hoffman.
And I'm Jerry Hoffman.
And where are we?
We're in Augusta, Missouri, at Mount Pleasant Winery.
And you both grew up around here?
Yeah,
we did.
15 minutes away. Dated in high school.
So meant to be, huh?
Yeah. Meant to be. I was 15.
I was 14.
Tell us about your journey, your life in 60 seconds.
Yeah, well, you know, we were high school sweethearts, right, which was fun. Grew up in a small town, went off to the big city, and found ourselves, after building a company that's global with 9,000 employees, back to where we started.
Wow, that's crazy. I don't know how you're going to encapsulate that journey in 15 minutes, but what happened? I mean, you're just a regular guy, you know, working class guy, right?
Yeah.
We're all just regular folks.
Yeah. I don't know, you get lucky in life. And
what started your journey? What did you first do that clicked?
When I was 25 years old.
Can I interject?
Yeah, sure. You
actually,
always do.
I always do. But I think it goes back a little further than that. I think you should take it back to when Dave grew up without privilege. And so did I. But Dave really did grow up without privilege.
Uh-huh.
I think he's been hungry. He's had a little fire in his belly from
so
the
that
time
was a,
I met him.
So I was a motivator.
It was a motivator.
Yeah.
And he's always been driven.
Yeah. I grew up without hot running water. I didn't have hot running water in my house.
Wow.
15 minutes from here until I was a sophomore in high school. Uh-huh.
But you guys do now.
We do now. Yeah, we got one or two toilets.
And it might come out of more than one faucet. Yeah.
And I think those humble beginnings, you know, Jerry met me. She said, you know, you need to take a shower.
Oh,
I said, well, I can't. No, I think it's actually helpful. It gives you drive and ambition. I like to think I haven't forgotten where I've come from.
Well, what started your journey?
When I got out of college, I got a job in corporate America. From there, I decided to start my own company.
And what
in
was
1989.
What was your vision then?
My vision was I thought I had a business that I could develop that was unique around the world, and that was in the executive search business. And
Headhunter.
Uh-huh. We did that, and that company grew to 65 offices worldwide.
Wow.
About 14 years ago, my oldest son took over that business, and then Jerry and I started branching out and buying real estate along with my youngest son. Then he got out of school. 4 years after that, built a billion-dollar real estate company for the family. And then we started buying businesses, all kinds of businesses. And today we've grown that with my family, my wife, my two sons.
What attracts you to a business that you want to buy?
I think it's people and it's location. You know, we're location-driven and we're people-driven. So
I would also tell you, I think Dave's very goal-oriented. I think from the very beginning, you wanted to be the largest owner of real estate in Franklin County when we were in our early 20s. Uh-huh. I mean, that was one of his goals, and he did it. So, yeah, it's been really interesting watching him
go. Wherever we go, we're in five distinct communities in America today, and in terms of real estate holdings. And we have 240 locations in total around the world. We're in 27 different countries. But when we go in and put our footprint on real estate, we become the biggest very quickly. We're now the largest owner of real estate in Augusta. We're the largest owner of real estate in Naples, Florida, Beaver Creek, Colorado, and
Winnetka, Illinois.
Winnetka, Illinois, the North Shore of Chicago. And
we're here in Augusta.
Yeah.
So tell us about that. You know, why?
Well, how fun is Augusta?
It's real fun. I don't want to leave.
Yeah, it's...
Maybe you could rent me a little workshop.
Yeah.
It, hook you up.
I think we were drawn to the charm. You know, honestly, we were cooped up with COVID. I watched this story of Yellowstone, and we came down here to see Jerry's parents and our other relatives, and we always knew this area was beautiful, and we thought as pretty as Napa. And I said, why can't we kind of do a Yellowstone deal here? And we saw that vision, started knocking on doors. And
well, it was also a little fortuitous because when we did the drive, the property at the corner of 94 and Jackson actually had a for sale sign on it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the first piece of property. And in a year and a half, we've got 51 properties here. Now we're building three hotels, and we have 1,250 acres, and we employ 600 people in the area a year and a half.
There's a whole nother layer, and that has to do with viticulture and wine and grape growing. You want to make this the next Napa.
Yeah, and that. Thank you. And
is that a conservative statement?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's bold, but
Napa's beautiful, and Napa has a lot going for
gorgeous.
It. But, you know, we were first, and Missouri.
Interject there, because I did not know. A lot of people do not know.
Yeah.
Tell us a story.
Well, you know, you heard about the Phloxera.
In France.
In France, and how these Missouri, the two Missouri, one was a scientist and one was a vine grower, and they developed this pest-resistant rootstock. But one of these gentlemen also went out to Napa and started Napa Valley. He left Missouri and went there. So that's sort of how Napa Valley also got its start.
Oh, interesting.
So we've got a connection there as well.
Yeah, and we've had friends out. We're both involved with the wine festival, which is the largest wine festival.
Naples Winter Wine Festival.
Naples Winter Wine Festival. So we have friends in Napa and been to a lot of it. And they've been here, and they're a little surprised on what they find.
But you're just starting, right?
Yeah, we're just getting rolling.
Yeah. Looking forward, what's your vision? I mean, you do things fast, roll out.
Yeah.
Let's say 2 years from now, what do you see?
2 years from now, we'll have three hotels here, major hotels, and we'll be selling 2 million bottles of wine worldwide.
Wow.
And we'll have a downtown that's vibrant like other downtowns in America. That's already starting. You were a little bit of that. You saw a little bit of that day, I hope, on Walnut Street.
Mm-hmm.
And we're opening a new business in Augusta every 90 days.
Wow.
And that's going to continue. So
you know what the magic is? So far, you've retained a Mayberry RFT feeling. It's like a Hollywood movie set.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is. But the scary part is, how do you not lose that? You know, how do you...
Well, that's a real concern.
Yeah.
It is a concern of all of us. And we love the charm here. Nobody wants to change the charm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we will. That's a great question. But if you look at how we do it, we're not developers.
Right.
We're redevelopers.
Interesting.
And we've never torn down a building. We have 240 of them in the U.S. We renovate them. That's a lot more expensive to do.
Mm-hmm.
But the end product is the end product.
But then on top of it, you have that patina of age on the building.
The history here is just, it's just incredible.
Mm-hmm.
It's profound.
And it goes way back. I mean, I was talking to somebody today, well, when did this start? And they go like 1830 or
what? 1830, 1840. Yeah.
Wow.
And over in Washington, where our family is from, I mean, we've got deep, deep roots there that go back to the early 1800s.
Mm-hmm. If you guys keep doing what you're doing, this really could be a game changer for the state of Missouri as a destination.
We think so. We hope so. And actually, I'll tell you, I think that's been the thing that's been the most gratifying is how supportive the state of Missouri has been with these efforts. I've thrown out the first pitch three times at a St. Louis Cardinals game. The Bush family, who founded Anheuser-Busch, has reached out to us and been extremely supportive. Local governments have been extremely supportive. You know, you often don't get that when you come in and influence change. And, and
you get the opposite a lot.
Yeah. And it's been a wonderful, wonderful journey and experience coming back to our home state where we grew up.
And not far from your home.
Just minutes away.
15 minutes. Same high school district as we both grew up. She went to Georgia, which is the Catholic high school, and I went to the public high school.
Uh-huh.
And we went to school with a lot of kids who grew up in Augusta, so same school district. So we're in the same school district where we started.
Is this home for you, or are you more based in Florida, D&D?
You know,
back and forth?
We're back and forth, but we spend a lot of time here now. And every day we get a little more connected here, so it's feeling more and more like we're home.
Right, the people here are great. The sense of community is just, it's just an all-American area.
When I know that a key to your success is your perceptive ability with people. Because without people, you have none.
Yeah, I agree with that. And
it's the
thank
business
you
started, Dave. I mean, it was a people-based business and a good news business. He was finding jobs for people. It was awesome.
Yeah, and I think both my sons have done a great job. I get a lot of the credit for it and a lot of the publicity for it. But that company that I started in 1989, last year was named one of the 400 best places to work by Inc. magazine in America.
Wow.
It was named by Forbes as one of the top five businesses of its kind to operate businesses anywhere in the world.
So again, that harkens back to the human dimension.
Yeah.
Because without it, it's just a bunch of bricks and mortar.
Yeah. That should be attributed to my son. I mean, he's just done a fabulous job. And this really is a family affair. And we have great employees and we have 9,000 of them now across the world, and we empower those folks.
You probably know everyone's name, don't you?
I would like to think so. I know a lot of them.
I could keep you guys all night, but I thank you so much.
Well, thank you for your interest and your enthusiasm. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, fascination. Love it.
Thanks. Thanks for being here.
Well, my pleasure. Thanks again.
My name is Colin Pennington. I'm the director of winemaking for Hoffman Family of Companies. I've been in the industry working here in Augusta, Missouri for 17 years.
Wow.
I'm somewhat of a local. I'm from Washington, Missouri, born and raised, still live there today, which is only about 20 minutes away. I've been making wine for 17 years now. I started in 2005.
You kind of backed into it, not intentionally, right?
So I went to school for a couple of years as a music performance major. I've played the violin since I was 10 years old. I thought that was what I wanted to do. I loved the violin. And I graduated high school thinking that's what I wanted to do. And after a couple of years of college, I realized I didn't really like taking a hobby that I love so much and turning it into a career. It just wasn't going to work out for me.
Right. So how did the wine come?
Yeah, so I dropped out of college and I took a couple of years just delivering pizzas and staying up till the sun came up.
Vampire time.
Yeah, with other friends that delivered pizzas. After 2 years of that, I decided it was time to find something different. I needed something permanent. I tried working in a factory and that lasted about a month. It just wasn't for me either. I was going through the classifieds of the local newspaper one day and I saw Mount Pleasant Winery was looking to hire somebody. It didn't say what for, mm-hmm. but at the time, I was good friends with the winemaker. I was good friends with his daughter. So I called her up and said, hey, I see this ad in the paper. Do you want to go talk to your dad with me? And she said, yeah. So we came over unannounced and found him and started talking to him. And he was excited. He said, yeah, I'd love to get you in here working for me. But I didn't put the ad in the paper. Our vineyard manager did.
Oh, wow.
And I don't have the work for you right now anyway. So here's what I'm going to do. We're going to start you off in the vineyard. Well, because the vineyard and the winery were two different companies at that time, there was some problems with that. So what I was doing was I was working Saturday and Sunday in the tasting bar for the winery, you know, working 10-hour days those 2 days. And then I would go out on Monday and Tuesday and finish my 40-hour week working in the vineyard.
Wow.
So I got to see different aspects of the wine industry.
Right. Were you doing pruning? And
yeah, I was doing everything. So, right. You know, I really got to see just how each vine was touched individually so many times throughout the growing season. Mm-hmm. You know, whether you're ripping suckers off of it, tying it up, doing pruning, all that stuff. So I really got to see that firsthand. After 2 months of that, and that was in the spring of 2005, as we entered, you know, the beginning of summer, there was some bottling that needed to be done, some cleaning that needed to be done in winemaking, and Mark, the winemaker at the time, moved me into winemaking to do these jobs, and when we finished them, we had enough work and going into harvest that I never had to go back, and I stayed in winemaking.
Oh, wow. You started out kind of cellar rat?
Yeah, I was a cellar rat. I was the bottom of the totem pole. So I worked for the winemaker. I had a cellar master above me. And that was in 2005, and then in 2009, the cellar master moved on to another winery. The winemaker parted ways, and I went from the bottom of the totem pole to the top of the totem pole in about 2 months.
Wow.
And I'd been doing it for 4 years at the bottom of the totem pole, mm-hmm. and I really took it as an opportunity that I said, I told myself this is either going to be really good, or it's going to be the end of my the end of my time in the Missouri wine industry. Right. And so I went head first in, and I did what I could, and I learned as much as I could that I didn't know yet. You know, did a lot of self-education, and it worked, and I was able to make good wines.
You know, it's so funny. I'm out in California, and you mentioned, oh, I was just in Virginia, or I was in Wisconsin, and wherever, and they just kind of roll their eyes. You know, and it's not an objective. They don't know what they're right. What they're talking about.
Right.
But yet, they think they know.
Yeah. So I've seen people from California come out and try to work, and it's just such a different beast out here mm-hmm. That it usually doesn't work out the way you think it does. And, you know, I got to work with these varietals in this area from the very beginning.
Right.
I've been in Augusta for 17 years now, mm-hmm. only working in Augusta.
Right.
And making the wine for four different wineries during my career. So
tell us what varietals work best here and for you.
My two favorite, you know, if I was to pick a red and a white, the Norton is our red. It's the Missouri State grape. It makes fabulous wine. It's one I've really seen, you know, as we were talking about the evolution of winemaking. Just in my 17 years, I've seen an evolution. If you go back just 10 years before that, you really see an evolution of the Missouri wine industry and the winemakers learning how to work with that grape.
Have you witnessed or seen how Norton works in other growing regions outside of the state?
I have. So, I mean, it works. They do good things in Virginia with it. Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen down in Texas, I've talked with winemakers that thought it was a horrible grape until they made dessert wines, ports out of it, which we do as well.
Right.
But they have different growing region, obviously, mm-hmm. down in Texas.
In your soil characteristic.
And that's a lot different, too, yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of different reasons why that doesn't work as well down there.
Are you talking about up in Lubbock where the majority of growers are?
Yeah. And so as far as white wine, I love the Vignole grape.
Uh-huh.
It's another one that's well, you know, they grow it well up in the Northeast, up in New York and Pennsylvania. Out here in Missouri, the biggest issue we have in Missouri is nobody knows what Vignole means because every winery makes it in a different style.
Oh, interesting.
So you can get a Vignole that's on the very end of the dry spectrum sometimes, if the year is right, to a lot of off-dry wines, a lot of mid-range sweetness levels, whether they're semi-dry, semi-sweet, and then some people that make a sweet wine out of it. And it works well for all of those.
Interesting. So it's kind of inherent in the grape itself?
So both of the wines that I've talked about, Norton and Vignole, they're both very difficult to work with from the acid level. They're both very high acid grapes. So if you get a year where you get a really good growing season, not a lot of water, but a lot of good ripening days, you can get that acid level down on the Vignole, and you can make it a drier wine at the end of the day, you know, at the end of the harvest.
Are you ever able to make ice wine here?
We do. We also cheat on it at times.
Put it in the freezer?
Yeah, pick it and cheat it. But that also allows us to give a product at a better cost to the customer.
Yeah, MacGyver and the Lake, it's, they have to get volunteer friends and family to come out.
Right. So to make an ice wine in a true style, you've got to get down to like -8 to -10 degrees Celsius, which if I remember correctly, that's like 14 to 10 degrees Fahrenheit.
Uh-huh,
it's
uh-huh.
very cold. You not only need to pick the grapes at that temperature, you need to process the grapes at that temperature.
Because the whole point, you have your water, they're frozen solid.
Right, so that just the sugar's coming out.
Yeah.
We don't get winters like that every year.
Right.
We do sometimes, mm-hmm. but you can't really plan for it because you don't know what you're going to get.
Could you do it on a whim, small batch?
We have, and it's fun to do.
Yes.
It's not fun cleaning a press when it's that cold, but...
That's really cool. As you're going forward, are you envisioning and daydreaming about new varietals that you might want to play with?
You know, we haven't gotten there yet. Right now, we're really looking at trying to up the production with the things that we're making now and the varietals we're very familiar with. There are some that I'd like to see us plant more of. There's a grape that Mount Pleasant has been using for years called Rayon d'Or. We use it to make our sparkling, our Brut Imperial, our champagne-style wine. It's also used in blending, and it makes a really good varietal wine also. It's not one that is really well-known. Vidal is one that grows in the area very well and makes a great, it's very versatile in what we can do with it. So those are, and Chamberson's the same way, it's very versatile in what we can do with it. So I'd like to see us producing more of that. One of the things that brought me to working at Augusta Winery in Montel about 4 years ago was Tony had made a commitment about 5 years. Tony Kiyumjin, the previous owner of Augusta Winery and Montel, had made a commitment to trying to promote the varietals, the actual grape varieties. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of proprietary blends or proprietary names for our wines out here where people don't really know what they're getting. And I'd seen so many people make a wine that was 90% Chamberson and call it something else.
Oh, wow.
And I really wanted to see, I thought to really get Missouri wines to flourish, people needed to know what they were getting.
Right.
So if you were making a wine that you could call Vignol, you were making a wine that you could call Chamberson, call it that. And so that was something that was very appealing to me about Tony and his wines, is he was really working to do that.
Let's go back in time, pioneer time.
Yeah.
This is the oldest AVA in America.
Yeah.
That's mind-blowing.
Yeah, so before Prohibition, Missouri was the second largest exporter of wine in the United States, I think behind New York, if I remember correctly. It was a huge industry for Missouri. Lots of gallons produced every year. And then Prohibition happened, and they came through and they destroyed the barrels, they destroyed the product they had, they ripped the vines out of the ground. And Prohibition didn't last forever, and a lot of those same families that own the wineries, you know, we're here at Mount Pleasant today, which was owned by the Minch family, they'd just seen their whole life ripped out of the ground before them, and they weren't willing to reinvest.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the 1960s, you saw a couple of people throughout, you know, the Held family out in Stonehill, out in Herman, Missouri. They still own Stonehill Winery. The Dressel family here at Mount Pleasant in the mid-60s, these were people that had a passion for wine that wanted to see the Missouri wine industry flourish again. They got into it in the 60s. It took decades to get us where we are today. But they're really the pioneers, you know, from 60 years ago that have given us what we have today.
What a trip. So today, how many wineries are in the state of Missouri?
So when I got into the industry in 2005, there were about 92 wineries in the state of Missouri.
Uh-huh.
I think at this point we're up to around 130. It's been growing, you know, pretty rapidly, just in the, you know, last 2 decades that I've been involved.
And most of the product is consumed within Missouri, or you got export?
Yeah, most of it is. It's very difficult nowadays to get your product across state lines. Not impossible, but most of those wineries are smaller. Most of them are selling on premise. For the ones that are doing wholesale industry, a lot of that is sold in the St. Louis and Kansas City region. And some people get into Illinois and Arkansas as well, but most of it's being sold in Missouri. And that's what's been exciting about the Hoffman acquisition, is that he's got the expansion. Right now we're sending wines down in Naples, Florida, and we'll be sending them all over the country and hopefully eventually around the world. Wines that are produced here in Augusta, Missouri.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Learn more about your world.
My name's Colin Pennington, and you can go for Augusta Winery. You can go to AugustaWinery.com. or MountPleasantWinery.com.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. This was
great.
Fun.
Yeah. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Missouri. We'll see you here.
My name is Chris Armstrong. I'm the Chief Marketing Officer for the Hoffman Family Companies, and I oversee the Augusta Project. This morning, we're at beautiful Montel Winery in Augusta, Missouri. We're on the hilltop looking over the Missouri Valley, and we are in America's first wine region.
That's really fascinating. Tell us the reason why.
So Augusta filed for the first AVA in 1978. It was approved in 1980. AVA stands for American Viticultural Area. So before Napa, before Sonoma, we were recognized by the federal government as the first wine region.
So that's fascinating. So that means back in the early, mid-1800s, they were producing wine and grapes.
The town of Augusta was founded in 1830 by German settlers. The first winery was built in Mount Pleasant Estates in 1859. The original buildings and structures are still there, and there are hand-carved cellars that date back 160 years that are still underground. They're available for touring, and the bricks were all baked and made on site as well, that you can see the brick oven.
Yeah, I mean, touring those old buildings and dungeons and whatnot, it is humbling because it's palpable how hard it was, physical labor.
There was a lot of dedication to do it. It's really amazing. There's a lot of houses that have cellars on the property. One of them dates back to 1830. That one, they filled it up with sand, and then they put the bricks over top, and then they dug the sand out. And the sand is what made the form and held the ceiling up while they put the bricks and the stone, the limestone. But it was all cut out by hand. It's really amazing.
Today, the Hoffman family in the Renaissance, literal rebirth, of Augusta.
Missouri at one point was the largest wine producer in the U.S. before Prohibition. Prohibition pretty much killed that, and it wasn't until the 60s and the 70s that it kind of was reborn as people were starting to travel, drive. We're just 45 minutes from St. Louis. Fun fact, Disney World was originally supposed to be in St. Louis.
Really?
That's why you have the shooting star in the logo, the representation of the arch. So this area has been seen before as potential in the Midwest. The 60s, the 70s, the town kind of, you know, picked back up, but things started declining. You know, Napa Valley became more known. Missouri wine had a stigma of being a very sweet wine, which isn't true, to be honest.
And well, they did make sweet wine.
Yes, yes, there are sweet wines.
Yeah, but the sad part, because I hear that same, even with Wisconsin wines, you know, it's all sweet.
Yeah, we grow Cabernet here. The Norton, which is a state grape of Missouri, is a very good grape. I would say our 2017 Norton Reserve would go up against any Cabernet. Previous to this, I'll admit, I never heard of Missouri wine either before I was involved in the project. And
so eye-opening for you.
Yeah, very eye-opening. Yeah. I think at one point we'll do a blind tasting and see, you know, what people think of it. So the area, after the 70s, the 80s, started declining. It's a very small town, 293 people, a lot of third, fourth generation families that live here. And the Hoffmans are actually from nearby Washington, which is only 10 minutes away. They met when they were 15. They've just celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary, and they've returned to the area. They saw the potential in Augusta and needing a little bit of a facelift and wanting to give back to where they grew up. And last year, beginning of January of 2021, we announced a $100 million investment into the area.
Say that one more time.
$100 million. It's now $150 million. Wow. So it's grown a little bit from the original. And as we got here, we saw more opportunities. There's a boutique hotel that's being built into an old property that dates back again to the 1800s. That wasn't necessarily on the radar in the beginning. We are building a five-star hotel. We'll be breaking ground on that.
Five-star?
Yep. We'll be a five-star hotel. We're looking at about 53 rooms, seven suites is ideally what it is. We have 100 acres just off of 94 with an entrance off of Church Street that was rezoned agricultural tourism, meaning that there's guidelines on what we can do with the property. We have to plant so many acres of vineyards. It can only be so many stories high. We're not developers. That's one thing. We don't tear things down. We're not interested in building apartments and everything else. The buildings for the businesses in town that we had purchased, we renovated in the sense of bringing them up to code, reinforcing the floors, but the original brick is still exposed on the inside of the emporium, the tin ceiling, the original floor. We even have the old tab and the cheese box that people in town that owed 5 cents for milk they hadn't paid or something. So it's really a unique project.
That's really cool. I think the bottom line that makes this so viable in potential is your proximity to major Irvine, Missouri.
Yep.
Wow.
So the St. Louis airport is only 45 minutes away.
Think about Napa, Sonoma, getting from SFO, double, triple that time if you're not in rush hour.
Yep.
So you guys are potentially spoiled.
Yes, yeah. Yes, we are. And in my opinion, we have more to do here, too, because it is such a small area. There's five wineries in the AVA. We have a complimentary trolley system that runs through town to the wineries. We have a river yacht. It's currently in the area, but the dock is being built. The dock will be done in about 2 weeks. The three-story, 105-foot yacht holds 149 people. We have overnight guest accommodations, so we've renovated an old log cabin that was, again, built in the late 1800s. Early 1900s, a little farmhouse that overlooks the vineyards. So there's places people can come and spend the night. There's bed and breakfasts. We have horse and carriages that run in the cooler months. There's just so much to do out here in terms of the areas. It's not just coming out to sample the wine, but also to experience the town.
To learn more about your world, do you have a go-to website?
Yep, we do. Go to visitaugustamo.com, and it has all the information about the town there. My name is Chris Armstrong. I'm the Chief Marketing Officer for the Hoffman Family Companies, and I oversee the Augusta Project.
Thank you so much for sharing. This is great.
Thank you.
I'm so glad I came here. And never would have guessed it.
Exactly. And that's what we want people to come out. And as we say, we're a taste of history in every glass.
Love it. And I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Missouri. We'll see you here.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst. From swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean, these experiences are unparalleled in their historical relevance and grandeur. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to preserve the past to inspire future generations of dreamers. This is accomplished through the youth education program focused on deserving junior high students across California. These children experience a world of science, technology, engineering, art, and math at Hearst Castle, one of the most awe-inspiring locations in the world. The legacy of Julia Morgan, one of the most important women in the history of engineering and architecture, is woven into the foundation at Hearst Castle's mission. Julia Morgan's life can continue to inspire and empower young women and young men all over the world. This is one of the few opportunities to donate to such an important cause that not only changes the lives and perspectives of children, but also provides lifetime memories and unrivaled experiences for our generous donors. Please go to the website foundation@hearstcastle.com to learn more about how you can help us with our important mission. You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomascwilmer.com.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station. And we'll attend their jubilee and see them spend their last 2 bits for none of it.